I get up every morning and I practice not believing in God. I just go, do I believe in God? No.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Tim Wick, Nick Glover, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, our guest is Rob Callahan. He joins us to talk about the weaponization of religion, which is a super serious topic for a comedy podcast.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Tim Wick. I am joined, as always, by my co-hosts, Molly Glover.
Oh, hello.
And Nick Glover.
That's me.
And we have a very special guest. He is a returning guest, but it has been probably about 5 years.
Yeah, I feel like it's been at least that long.
It's been at least that long. But Rob Callahan is back with us. Hello, welcome back, Rob.
Hello.
Hello. He was here to talk to us about going to a creationist science fair, which is a really interesting podcast. You could check it out. We're going, I guess, a little more global than a creationist science fair in a small mall near my home.
Right.
We are going to talk a little bit more about, I don't know. I think when we were pre-gaming this podcast, it's almost the weaponization of religious freedom.
No, so, that's a really good way to describe it.
So, Rob, why don't you frame this conversation for us, since you were the one that brought the topic?
Oh, I'm not sure if I know how, but weaponization of religious freedom is a great way to start. This episode was inspired mostly by an NPR article about a guy named Scott Warren, who was busted harboring a couple of migrants. And in his defense, he is evoking, a little both maybe, religious freedom. And he's fighting back against the charges because his religious beliefs compel him to harbor these people who are in danger from the federal government.
So, yeah, he's saying, because of my religion, I basically have no choice but to harbor these individuals.
Which
undocumented
migrants.
Immigrants.
Yeah, I mean, they're moving from one place to another. I mean, I don't know if they're intending to stay here, but
has Geeks Without God ever talked about the use of particular languages in these conversations? Because a lot of people will say illegal immigrants or even illegals.
Illegals makes me crazy. Yeah.
I don't think we've talked about it.
We should though. This is a great time to do
this
it.
This is a good opportunity.
I personally, I will push back against anyone I see saying illegals or illegal immigrants, just because, I mean, what they mean when they say illegal immigrants is somebody who hasn't gone, what they mean is brown person. That's what they mean. They don't mean somebody who decided to hop over the border from Canada and get a job and hang out, which there are plenty of people
who do that as
well.
They don't mean somebody from Europe who came over here and overstayed their work visa.
It depends. How thick is their accent, Tim?
Yeah.
That's a big part of it.
And are they British? Because Americans love British people.
Oh, British people are fine.
British
We're fine
people
with
fine.
Them.
Yeah.
But if they have an Eastern Bloc accent or they are brown, then they are illegal immigrants who are here to steal our jobs.
I hate it because people aren't illegal. Actions are illegal.
Mm-hmm.
Things are illegal.
Mm-hmm.
But people aren't fucking illegal. A person isn't illegal. Maybe the state of their presence, which is the action, could be considered illegal. It's kind of gross. It sounds so both othering and kind of objectifying in a way that like referring to someone as it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's the choice of language, whether it's illegal immigrant or just illegal, you are making a violation of the law an integral and inseparable part of that person's identity. And sorry about that. Yeah, it's dehumanizing.
Yeah.
Well, that's the intent.
That is the intent.
I mean, undocumented is more accurate. They don't have the proper documents. But even that is dehumanizing.
Mm-hmm.
So, what is the best term?
I think migrant is a good one.
Migrant.
I said migrants yep. because the article calls these two men migrants.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I mean, that's just a person who is migrating from one place to another. That seems pretty innocuous to me,
with
right?
or without like, documentation. Yeah.
Right.
I
mean,
I on this radio show that I do, when I'm talking about issues of border crossings and immigration and so forth, I tend to refer to everyone generically as indigenous. Hmm. Without respect to whether they were born north or south of the U.S.-Mexico border.
Sure.
My audience for that show understands, you know, that terminology in that way. So it's mm-hmm. just what we do. But I think you can't, there is no blanket term that you can use when talking about these issues. You have to tailor the terms you use to the particular discussion you're having.
Well, I also get frustrated when people say things like, they're coming to America and they're not Americans. And it's like, well, I mean, yes, they are. They are from Central and South America.
Even North America.
And North America, yeah. which is Mexico.
Right.
So, yes. And this concept that we are America, and I understand the colloquial use of it yeah. and everything, but it's the words we you are. Use matter.
We are the United States.
Right.
Or that
America.
American means white has always super bothered me. Mm-hmm. In high school, a girl mentioned that, and it just has stuck with me ever since. She's just like, someone referred to a bunch of white kids as like, oh, those American kids, and she was mm-hmm. like, fuck that.
Yeah.
Like, very yeah. vocal about it.
Well, we've seen that a lot more, though, mm-hmm. In these last couple of years. Like, I think that feeling has always been there among the, not among real people, but among racists.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
And now it's sort of, it's those folks are very emboldened, and people who may not have realized they felt that way before are starting to grasp onto it and hold it closer than they may have before.
It's being normalized, and it's being implied that it's okay.
It's yeah. And one of the it's funny because this kind of ties back to this whole, you know, my religion says I have to help the poor. My religious beliefs say I have to help those who are in need, who are in danger.
My religious belief says that I can't make a cake for you because you're gay.
Sure.
Right.
But the idea that, you know, you hear a lot of people that I know who are reasonable people generally will try to pivot with their stance on why they don't believe, like in terms of like the migrant caravan and things like that, why they consider that a threat. And they'll say that illegal immigrants, as it were, are a problem because we have enough poor in our own country to take care of. But yet these people also don't want to take care of the poor.
Right.
Like,
right.
I mean, they're saying like, well, we actually have a lot of, and they get all on their high horse. We have significant poverty even here in Minnesota. I'm like, okay, so what are you doing about that? Oh, yeah. Nothing? So how is your nothing about that having a problem doing nothing about this?
Yeah, like, you're not going to do shit no matter how many poor we have, right?
It's kind of astonishing the mental gymnastics people can do with you know, coupling with the verbiage used that others people, mm-hmm. and then they take that, and then they shift to this other othering of the poor. Meaning like the white poor really is what they generally mean, because it's usually white people saying this, mm-hmm. especially in my sphere, because that tends to be the people in my world, because I'm in Minnesota and I'm a white lady. But it is all these people who have this concept of Christianity and say they're Christians and devout Christians, even who, you know, I don't see them doing any works or necessarily, or but yet they're talking very angrily about how these poor are the wrong kind of poor.
No one out there shouting America first is thinking Americans first, or the majority of Americans first, or non-white Americans first.
Increase welfare.
Right. No, yeah. Exactly. Americans yeah. first, universal health care.
Yeah.
None of the things.
First, eat the rich. Like that.
Right. None of the things that would benefit Americans are a part of America first. It's just fucking nationalism.
Did you see the headlines from earlier today that Trump is saying he's going to sign an executive order to bypass the 14th Amendment?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. And then Paul Ryan saying, no, you can't do that. That's not how it works.
Which when Paul Ryan is telling Donald Trump, you can't do yeah. that. That's actually not. Well, not okay.
But see, the subtext there is, no, you can't do that with an executive order. You have to let us do it for you, sir. Lick, lick, lick.
Yes. What bothers me more than anything, and he is doing it, I, again, I think Trump says that because what he's doing, and the elections will be over by the time this podcast goes up, but the goal right now, shortly before the election, for the Republicans is to prevent the Democrats from flipping the House, because that's very much in question. We don't know if that's going to happen or not. Fingers crossed that we're more cheerful when this podcast goes up than we are now. But nonetheless, if the House is not flipped, then they could start work on a constitution, on repealing that amendment. And that's what Trump is floating. He's trying to get people to come out to vote for the ability to have Congress do that.
Which is funny because the people who are going to react to that statement do not understand checks and balances and do not know what has to happen to repeal an amendment. And all they're hearing is Trump positive, Trump power. He's going to do all the things So maybe that would affect it if we were in 2020.
Right. And you have to understand the math, which is in order to amend the Constitution, you need a 2/3 majority in both the House and the Senate. And they don't have that, and they're not going to have that.
No.
But and I mean, that's something that you can't change. It's in the Constitution. You can't.
If they voted on it today, they couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Right.
So in any case.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
In any case, we're talking more about immigration than weaponizing religion. But even so, I think that what Trump did there that was very dangerous, and what he does a lot, is in his description of the 14th Amendment giving right of citizenship to anybody born in the United States, he said, no other country does this.
Right.
Which is really false. It's not just kind of false. It's not like there are two other countries that do it. There are dozens of countries that have the same policy. It's not unusual at all. Most first world countries have this policy. But he just spouts out bullshit that people buy.
So what is it about weaponized Christianity? Because that's what we're talking about, really. We're
sort of
talking about, I mean, well no, there's no one's weaponizing Judaism.
Well,
in the
article on NPR that Rob brought us, the guy isn't Christian. He's not really anything. It seemed like he was kind of a.
He doesn't say.
I think in the article he says it's like a power or general good in the world. Does he say something along those lines?
Yeah, it sounds kind of vaguely New Agey pagany.
Yeah, that was the impression I got.
That's fair, but I guess in terms of a larger conversation, when people and things weaponize religion, it's generally for harm. There are a few instances of for good, like the Satanic Temple doing it, you know, and things like that. But you know, more often than not, it is to do harm to others. And I find it interesting that it's Christianity that's getting weaponized and being used by people like Trump and Pence to pretty drastically oppose what I've understood to be Jesus's teachings, like taking care of each other, respecting each other.
Let me correct you by quoting Jeff Sessions.
Please quote Jeff Sessions.
Oh boy,
because that would make this day great.
And this will tie it back from the discussion we're having about immigration, back to weaponized religious freedom. This is back in June when it wasn't new and news hadn't just broken, but there was a sudden zeitgeist, and all of the media were covering abduction and caging and relocation of indigenous children against their will, against their parents' will or their family's will.
Basically, removing them from their families and making it virtually impossible for them ever to be reunited with their families.
And I gave a lot of coverage to this on Indigenous Roots, and there were detention centers in New York. They would take these kids in Texas, fly them up to New York, transfer them in the middle of the night with hoods over their heads so they didn't know where they are and nobody knew what they were doing.
Yep.
And bring them into court without a translator.
Yeah, there was a one-year-old
in court.
Yeah. And they were asking this one-year-old questions, knowing full well that the one-year-old couldn't answer.
But Jeff Sessions,
so
tiny Keebler elf that he is.
Oh my God, he's Ernie. So... he's up at the podium responding to questions, and he says, I would cite to you the Apostle Paul and his clear and wise command in Romans 13 to obey the laws of the government because God has ordained the government for his purposes. Essentially, the only other times historically in the United States this Romans 13 has been used this way was to defend slavery pre-Civil War.
Oh, fuck's sake.
And actually, like pre-United States, it was the those who did not want to rebel from England, the anti-separationists,
mm-hmm.
were using it to say, no, we can't stand up to England. God has ordained England as our
yeah. It's, which is part of why our founding fathers pointed out we needed a separation of church and state, because they had all these people right. who didn't want to fight against the king.
What, I mean, what about like render unto Caesar what is Caesar's? Like,
right. Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
that's because this is Romans. And not Jesus stuff. This is that old Roman that shit is, where it's all fire and blood. And
I feel like when Christians want to really delve into dickery, then they stop reading Jesus.
They
and
go
they
Old
start,
Testament.
They go Paul. No, they go Paul.
Oh, sure.
Paul's got a lot of dickery.
All those wars and killings and getting it on with each other's handmaidens.
The scales fell from his eyes, though, Tim. He sees all clearly.
I know. But yeah, I mean that is a good example of the weaponization of Christianity. This and with Brett Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court, that they're trying to get religious freedom defined essentially as the right to use your religion to refuse to do anything you don't want to do.
White people.
Right.
Yeah. Because like I'm telling you, it's gonna be amazing. The first time that a brown person who is a devout Christian or a black person who is a devout Christian decides to use their power to try to get out of something, it isn't gonna work. And same with anyone trying to like, I mean, we don't even have to like do. I mean, there isn't even a question about a Muslim person trying to say like, oh, this is my religion and therefore I should be allowed to do whatever I want.
Right.
Like this concept, if you think about like. I've had some people flip this around, like the thing today. So the thing that today that happened was Mike Pence had a messianic Jewish rabbi bless a bunch of Republican senators and then bless the Republican Party and then go on to talk about like how good those Republicans are and how important that is, and didn't say the Kaddish and didn't mention the names of the dead and didn't do any of that until the end. And someone was saying, now just imagine this. Imagine the year is 2013 and Joe Biden introduces, you know, an imam from a church to come out, and that imam blesses all of the Democrats who are running right now and like all this same stuff, but flipped the script to be, you know, and it's like people would lose their fucking minds. Like it would. And yet because it's Christianity and they're just doubling down on this, we are a Christian nation thing and trying to just make it very clear that Christians who are at this point, I think the minority or if a majority, a very slight majority.
Oh, they still, it's like 70% of the country.
Is it
Christian.
Still? Okay. Yeah. I wasn't sure. I know there's, I know that it's not, I mean, I'm sure white Christians is probably a smaller number than 70%, but.
Probably.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, for context, we're recording just a few days after the massacre at synagogue.
In October 30th.
In Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And Messianic Jew, if you are not aware, they are essentially Jews for Jesus. They aren't Jews. They are Christians.
Right.
They're Christians who've adopted an aesthetic and some language.
There's the thing with Judaism is there's religious Judaism and ethnic Judaism. And so you can be an ethnic Jew without being a religious Jew.
Right.
And a lot of these people are ethnic Jews who identify that way, but then have this completely different dogma.
Right.
Yeah.
And it tends to be very conservative and very weird. It is a weird subset.
They're insulting to other Jewish faiths.
Yes.
Well, absolutely, because they're essentially adopting the trappings of the Jewish faith to convert.
Mm-hmm.
They're lying.
They're sticking feathers in their ass and claiming they're chickens.
Oh my God, religion's the worst. I just like everything today. Like everything has just been really building up, and I'm it's very frustrating.
So.
No, go right ahead.
If it's predominantly Christian religion being weaponized and the belief in some weird variation of Christian faith is what people are using as an excuse for bigotry and discrimination, how do you fight it or fix it?
Well, it seems like what people are trying to do is weaponize it back. I mean, that's what I think this Warren guy who's saying his religion says he needs to help these migrants.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he's trying to do. He's trying to say, all right, well, if you're going to weaponize religion, you don't just get to, you don't just get to prime the pump on Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get to, you have to do everything. And as much as we sit here and say that it is being designed, that the idea is it is for white Christians, the laws they're looking at passing and could well pass by no means are limited to those religions. So it's really going to, so it feels like the, what's going to happen is there's going to be a pushback, but that pushback almost has to come from white religions other than Christianity.
The problem is that then it goes to the Supreme Court. Right, I mean, right. That's the problem, is that, like, sure, they can pass a law and it can be unjust, and then you fight it and it goes to the Supreme Court, and then the Supreme Court decides, and guess what? We're fucked.
And
like,
once
it's
the Supreme Court decides once, no one's going to challenge it again.
You kind of can't. It's very difficult to challenge
a lifetime, maybe.
Right.
You know?
That's why Roe v. Wade has been around, and even though they've rechallenged and people have tried to rechallenge it over and over, it doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah, it's, I mean, but I think, no, the point is that it goes to the Supreme Court and it passes, which there's a very good chance it will.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of religious freedom, this religious freedoms laws that they're trying to get passed. The main thing that might save us is Roberts is the one conservative member of the court who has some knowledge of what level of fucked up they could drop on the United States if he rules for it. Nonetheless, say it goes to the Supreme Court and it's upheld, then you've essentially weaponized it for anybody. You've weaponized it for Muslims. You've weaponized it for atheists. You've weaponized it for the Satanic Temple.
That's the thing. I don't know if you can say that you've weaponized it for atheists, because there's a difference between, like, religion and non-religion. Like,
true.
We don't have a religion. And people who say atheism is just another kind of religion are...
It's not the opposite of a religion. It's the absence
of it. It is the absence of. That's why that's why we have freedom from... It's freedom from religion,
right.
Even though it is... That's the language I quibble with in terms of, you know, it's freedom of religion minus... I think it should be freedom from.
All right. Well, then I withdraw the atheist statement.
Yeah.
But let's just say the Satanic Temple for a second.
Sure.
The point is that... anybody that's got an established religion now has the legal standing to say, I get to do this because it's part of my deeply held religious belief. And as long as they've got tenets in their religion that they can show that indicate it is indeed part of their deeply held religious belief.
This is only in theory.
But I mean, the thing is, they're going to push it. They're going to do this stuff over and over again. They're going to say this law makes it right. And what could result is the laws eventually being repealed. But I'm not saying it's going to be fast. I'm not saying it's going to be pretty. It's going to be ugly and it's going to be awful.
Here's why I got enthusiastic and cut you off.
Okay.
I apologize for that. And I say it's only in theory is because in 1978, when I was 3 years old, the American Indian Religious Freedom Act was passed. Because before then, it was a federal crime. You could go to federal pound-me-in-the-ass prison, to quote Office Space, for practicing your religion if your religion was any of the Native American ways of life. And in theory, the 1978 law turned that around, and it was going to stop happening. But here we are, you know, over 40 years later, exactly.
Yep, exactly.
And the feds still come and bust up our lodges and still take us away. Not all the time, not with the frequency they used to, but they still do it any chance they get. They did it at Standing Rock. They did it to us down at Highway 55 20 years ago. They do it up north anytime they can.
Because the thing is, a law protects you from legal prosecution. It doesn't protect you from the cops. It doesn't protect you from being yanked in. Just like, you know, yes, it says, right, there's all these laws about what they have to do to prove that I murdered someone. But if a cop came to your house tonight and had a warrant, regardless of how that warrant got achieved, like, that's the thing. Or if I got stopped in traffic, that's how all these traffic stops, people going to prison, people going to jail. Like, I mean, it's...
They don't even need to press any charges just to bring you in to ask you
exactly.
questions.
Exactly. They can imprison you for up to multiple days, stretching into weeks. Laws are paper.
And am I the only one here who's ever, like, been to jail and been to holding?
Nick's been. Yeah. He got...
No.
I thought it was a protest that you got
I got
picked up.
I got zip tied, but we got away. Someone had nail clippers in their pocket.
Nice. Nice.
That was at the 55 protests, wasn't it?
Was.
It? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you were down there too?
I was. Oh. I was young.
We should. And if you have any old pictures, we should look through them. I bet we'll be standing next to each other.
I don't, but.
He had a house fire shortly after that.
Yeah, yeah. We lost a bunch of stuff. But I was there when the. I was there on the day when the tear gas was flying. I didn't get much of it, but me and a friend got zip tied, and they another person that they lined us up with had nail clippers in their pocket. So we just clipped ourselves up and just walked away like nothing happened. And
if they want to try and get you to get yourself in more trouble when you're in there, they use every scare tactic mm-hmm. imaginable. And I remember, like, it was during 55, a friend of mine who was Ojibwe, he was from Canada. They were holding him by himself, wouldn't let him talk to anyone, and they kept telling him, "We're going to deport you back to Mexico."
Oh, fuck!
Don't cooperate. And he was
threatening you with a vacation.
He doesn't speak any Spanish.
Right.
What am I going to do in Mexico?
Like he could get by in Ojibwe if he had to, but English is his language.
Oh my God!
So you know, and they do things like that.
Oh yeah, they absolutely. And there's. You know, there's stories of people, I haven't been to jail, but I have friends who have, and people getting their medicine taken away,
yeah.
getting their glasses taken away and things like that so they couldn't see. You know, just like I had a friend in college who she said they took away her glasses when she got put into prison jail in Seattle. She got picked up because she was a heroin user, and she got picked up and they took away her glasses, and she has such bad vision that she was like, "I couldn't see anything. I couldn't tell if the person coming into my cell was the same person, if they were a guard or if they were someone else." She's like, "I was in constant fear. They took away her glasses because they said she might kill herself with them. So they took them away." And she just sat there for 4 days, completely blind, over a holiday weekend, unable to see anybody, unable to read anything they gave her. Just, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So, I think the point is that this kind of the situation could be very dangerous. That even if, anyway, it's not good. It's not something that should happen. It is my hope that it doesn't. But if it does, I think what's going to happen to fight back is a whole bunch of people are just going to start using religious freedom as an excuse. And yeah, the police can arrest them.
Oh yeah.
But they can't charge them. So eventually they'll keep doing it, but they won't do it as much. Well, and I don't know. I just feel like there's no good result.
Well, sure.
Is the flip side to this is a possible solution to this to put people's religiosity on trial? If someone says, "I can't bake a cake for you because it's against my Christian ideals," then you say, "All right, let's find out how Christian you are. How much do you donate to charity? What good works have you done? Where do you go spread the word and evangelize?" Like all these things that are Christian values that are part of your religion. If you don't do all that shit, you don't get to pull this one card.
Like if government's going to be in religion, make it all the way in religion?
I mean...
Maybe
that's the thing with the Religious Freedom Restoration Act is one of the things you have to do is prove that you are sincere in your beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
One of like the three things you have to do.
Yeah, Hobby Lobby managed to do that by they had a whole because with that's they were with their they didn't want to provide contraception to their employees even though it was a federal mandate, and so as a result they had to prove that they were sincere in that, and I think they were able to do that because it's in their mission statement and it's in all their corporate literature.
Sure.
That they have all these religious tenets and everything like that, but also you know a helpful Supreme Court didn't hurt.
Right.
You know, it's.
Yeah. As much as I hate to say it, and we do need to kind of move on to five questions, but as much as I hate to say it, when I've thought about this situation, I mean, if these laws start getting passed, the best thing to do is not take them to court. And that's very difficult. You know, if you're a same-sex couple and you go into a baker and they refuse to bake a cake because you're homosexual, the best thing to do is take a picture of the business and post it online.
Sure.
And say they refuse to do business with me.
The court of public opinion.
Yeah. Therefore, you should refuse to do business with them and not take them to court. Because if you take them to court, then you have a much better chance of the Supreme Court ruling on something you don't want them to rule on.
Luckily, the EPA says that the heat death of the world is coming in like 14 years. So probably we don't have to worry about this for many more terms.
Yeah, we'll be fine.
Yeah.
Humans and a lot of mammals. Cockroaches will be fine.
Yeah, all right, so, I mean, the Earth is going to be here. So don't worry about that. The Earth is going to be fine.
The wealthy will be fine in their super yachts.
You know, the wealthy will be fine for a little while, but I'm pretty sure after a while they're going to die.
They're going to be
they don't have any skills.
Well, yeah, who's going to actually farm their food? They have to be able to eat somehow.
I guarantee that there are bitches who do not know that the Whole Foods doesn't just populate itself with food. that they will eventually be like, but like, I don't understand. Like,
where's my fresh kale? Where's my kale? All right, Rob, this is your second time on the podcast. That means you get to ask us five questions.
Five questions.
All right. Some of them will be sincere. And some of them I will not be able to prove are sincere.
Perfect.
Question number one, who is your favorite Ayn Rand character?
Oh, fuck's sake.
Jesus Christ.
Having never read Ayn Rand, I'm going to say Atlas.
Fuck you, because I was going to say the Fountainhead.
Atlas was the biggest dick of that story.
But he shrugged. Yeah. So
he refused to do his job because people didn't appreciate him enough.
I know. My favorite Ayn Rand character is the guy in college who paid me $50 to read the Fountainhead for him and write up a summary. But I don't remember what it was because that was 24 years ago.
My favorite Ayn Rand character is Ayn Rand, who is a contradiction in all things.
She's on welfare.
All sorts of problems and contradictions.
Haircut, above all.
Right. I mean, yeah, but Jesus fucking Christ. Like, how do you write something so dry and awful and stick around for so long? I guess the answer is assholes.
But who is John Galt?
That was an actually good answer, Nick, so thank you.
No.
Okay. Rob, question number two.
Which Marvel Cinematic Universe character are you?
Ooh, MCU, not the 616.
Which am I? That's the difficult part of that question. Nick, I bet you know.
I'm overwhelmed with things to consider. I'm Hawkeye. I'm just a guy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't got like kids, but you know, like I've got a life. I've got a home. I've got a wife.
Yeah.
And I don't have any superpowers. I'm talented at some things.
Sure. I'm the Vision.
The Vision.
Vision.
I'm
like
Vision.
Pixies.
Yes, I know. I'm Vision. I am a robot of sorts. I love one person very, very much. They matter very much to me. I care about a lot of other people, but really, there's just one person that I'm going to die for, and. I'm funny accidentally.
I mean,
human emotions elude you.
Human emotions elude me.
We've talked about Marvel enough on this podcast. I hate to go with the obvious answer, but really, it is Spider-Man. I mean, I'm the nerd who, if I got superpowers, I'd just be like, "Sweet, you guys, check out what I can do."
Tim, can you touch your toes?
No, but I would need to get bitten by a radioactive spider for this to work. You got to understand, there are parameters here.
He's not Spider-Man. He's Peter Parker.
Peter Parker. Yeah, Peter Parker. There you go. All right. Question three.
We're only on three? All right.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So throughout our lives, there have been many predicted apocalypses or apocalypi that have not come to pass. Thinking back on the ones you can recall, do you have a favorite?
Y2K.
Y2K was good.
Because I graduated in 2000. So, and I was super into computers already and on the internet, like, gangbusters and you know, playing shit online, and the Y2K thing, like, we all knew it was laughable, like, when it was before it was happening, and we knew it was like plane, but people were saying shit like planes are gonna fall out of the sky because of the autopilot is gonna malfunction because it's gonna
all the nukes are gonna go off at once
like the shit people said just showed such a lack of comprehension about computers. Like, what the problems were, like banking software and spreadsheets and mm-hmm. databases and shit like that. That's what like the problem was. But like even then, not a huge problem. But I would have been at like I would have been like 18 during the apocalypse if it had happened and technology had just stopped working somehow.
Yeah, I was going to say Y2K as well, just because my grandmother made us all get into one place. So she got hotel rooms for us because we all needed to be together as a family in case the world ended. She was very convinced it was going to happen. And it was my first New Year's Eve at age 21. And I was not allowed to do anything fun. And instead, my boyfriend at the time, my brother, his girlfriend at the time, our brother and sister, my cousins, aunts and uncles, we were all like at the Hyatt Regency or some fucking like downtown hotel, just in rooms watching TV and just eating chips and like not having any fun at all and counting down to midnight with my grandma in tears, like clutching a handkerchief to her mouth, waiting for it to happen. And then nothing happened. And it was like, Happy New Year. So can we go do something now? Like it could happen. It could still happen. Just wait. We had to wait a half hour. And then she decided a half hour, it would probably have happened in that time.
Wouldn't you have already known an hour ago what happened in New York?
That's what I asked her. And she said Y2K was localized.
Oh, God.
And so when the first midnight hit, wherever it is that it hits, like on the other side of the goddamn globe, and nothing happened, I was like, I feel like it's like, you know, it's like noon at this point. I'm like, I think we can call it. And no.
Because I knew people, I had friends who actually believed in it. 2012 was a great Armageddon. You know, the whole idea.
Where they had the buses going around with the painted sides.
Yeah, but I mean, they had the movie that was coming out. But I mean, there are people that actually believed, you know, because the Mayan calendar ended in 2012, that clearly that was the end of the world. Instead of the Mayans didn't really perceive that they would need a calendar that went beyond that date. It was a great. And then the movie was spectacular.
I'd forgotten about 2012. I'd actually forgotten about the hysteria.
I will guiltily admit that I loved the movie 2012 because it was it was Lloyd Dobler saving the world.
It was I appreciate that and I enjoy that, but it was still spectacularly dumb.
Yeah,
spectacularly dumb. All right, question number four.
Mm-hmm.
Which hashtag do you hate the most?
Blessed. Yeah. Hashtag blessed.
And why?
Hashtag blessed. Like, I've used it ironically and, like, cringed at my own ironic use of it. Like, it's being said out loud in, like, a Valley Girl accent, it's not as bad because it's more clear that irony is happening there, maybe. But hashtag blessed is, it should just be changed to hashtag white privilege. Because, like, that's what they're saying. Like, when someone says, oh, I did this and I did this and I got my latte and there was no
first
one in
world,
line.
First world privilege, I'd say.
First world privilege.
Yeah.
Sure. That's probably
I've
more
seen, I've seen plenty of non-white people using it.
That's fair.
Non-ironically.
It could just be hashtag privilege.
Yeah.
Because you're not blessed. You just lucked out. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah. Ugh.
It doesn't get used as often anymore, but hashtag YOLO.
Oh,
because
yeah.
To me, as a person who has excused self-destructive behavior with drugs and alcohol in the past, as a, hey, you only live once, got to live life, you know, seize the moment, carpe diem kind of a style. Hashtag YOLO to me became this like, do anything you want at any time. Because YOLO, and so it was a very, again, a very privileged, sort of entitled way of looking at the world. Like, oh, I didn't go to work today. Not, like, subtext. Like,
not thinking about who else you're affecting in their
lives. Yes, exactly. Yeah, subtext, like, other people had to pick up your slack. But hashtag YOLO, like, I am living my life for me. And that, to me, is the worst sin.
I do not pay a lot of attention to hashtags. I guess I would have said hashtag blessed, mm-hmm. and so I will take hashtag blessed because I think it is it's used in a way that I think is trivial.
Sure,
it's like God went through the trouble of letting me get my, my latte in half the time that I normally get it. Hashtag blessed. It's like this idea that there is a supernatural being that is gonna give you this really
who's in
awesome,
charge of everything.
Who's in charge of everything, who's gonna make sure that your latte comes out well, whilst at the same time allowing, you know, 1,000 children to die of malaria in Africa at the same time.
Omnipotent.
Yeah. So I dislike the triviality.
I will also just a side note. I also hate when people have more hashtags than substantive text, like in a post when it's like the post will be like, really enjoying my winter with my family. Hashtag skiing, hashtag Aspen, hashtag vacation, hashtag a winter vacation, hashtag 2018, hashtag winter 2018, hashtag skis, hashtag choco, hashtag chalet. And you're like,
hashtag blessed.
You're like, what the fuck? Like, I don't understand what's going on with this post, but like, how long did it take you to do all that?
Is it question four?
Question five.
Question five. Okay.
All right. I'll return a question that you all asked me on my last my visit here. Who is your favorite atheist character?
So mine's changed since the last time I answered it. This is exciting. My favorite atheist character is, I guess, actually, now that I think about it, I don't know if he counts. So Locke Lamora, in The Lies of Locke Lamora, technically believes in a god that is like the god of thieves, right? Like
the 13th unnamed god.
The 13th unnamed god, which isn't a god, but is a god. And like, so he like prays to this unnamed god that maybe doesn't exist, but like is of the, but at the same time, he doesn't really believe in him and he doesn't believe in any of the other gods and lies a lot to people, pretends to be penitent from all these other religions in order to be a con man, which he is one of the greatest con men of all time. So that currently, I don't know if that qualifies the more I think about it, but yeah.
It's because it's not about the god.
Right.
We'll allow it.
Yeah, we
can allow it.
All right.
I think mine's changed too. I think maybe Reed Richards.
Mm.
There was this pretty spectacular run of Fantastic Four and FF by Jonathan Hickman that led up to his run of Avengers, New Avengers, and Into the Infinity event, which he, like, that was the end of his career at Marvel. Like, he did everything that he wanted to do, and he's like, done. But there's this great moment when Reed is talking to the kids and leaving, and they can't hear him, or someone's listening. I can't remember why it's written down, but he holds up like a couple pieces of paper to his kids, Franklin and Valeria, and he says to them, "I am a man of science. There is no God. There is no heaven. There is no hell. No hell equals it doesn't matter what we do, equals what we do is all that matters."
And then
like, do you understand, children? Like, for all my failings, please remember that. Like, all, like, the only thing that matters is what we do.
Yeah.
It's not nihilistic.
No. It's not that nothing matters. It's that everything matters now, here.
Right.
That's all.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. I don't remember what I said when we initially went through these questions, so it may be the same. But I'm still going to say Sherlock Holmes.
I was just going to say, I'm pretty sure you said Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, Sherlock Holmes, it doesn't matter the incarnation. You know, it's all the more impressive.
I mean, it matters a little.
It's all the more impressive because the person who created Sherlock Holmes was not an atheist. He believed in all sorts of crazy shit. But Sherlock Holmes very much is a practical, there's a logical explanation and we will find it. And it's whatever it is, it's not supernatural.
Plus, gotta love a heroin addict, right?
Yeah. Heroin. But you know, the classic Sherlock Holmes stories, the new Sherlock on the BBC, Elementary in America.
Talked about here before.
Which I've watched all of. You know, in all those incarnations, even if it isn't always mentioned, it is very clear that Sherlock Holmes is a non-believer.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
that's my choice.
Nice.
All right.
Good questions.
Great. Yeah. Thank you, Rob.
Thanks for having me back.
Yeah. Thank you for being back. That was a depressing topic, but we don't blame you. it's not your fault.
Well,
a lot of the episodes, because I have not heard every episode. I don't listen religiously, if you will.
Rob.
Gasp.
But I catch a lot of them when I can. And a lot of the episodes tend to be a lot more fun. But there have been other serious episodes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
For sure. And
I'm
the thing
not
is,
the first wet blanket.
No, and I think it's important to have... You know, the thing is, you can talk about something serious, and I think a lot of people shy away from these sorts of topics or thinking about these sorts of things because it's depressing. And, you know, I see a lot of people, I think it's well-meaning. I see a lot of people in my Facebook feed saying things like, the world is awful, so let's think about kittens. Or like, you know, hey, everyone, I know things are really hard and sad, but I just wanted to tell you that I had a really great, you know, day-to-day doing this thing. And I get the impetus behind that, and I think it's admirable. But at the same time, it kind of makes it feel like, don't think about sad things, think about kittens, you know. And so I think it's important to have both. It's important to think about kittens and celebrate your friends' good days, but it's also very important to examine critically, you know, the terrible things that are going on and
the
just sort
that
of
threaten kittens.
Yes, and let yourself not wallow, but like soak in it a bit and think about it and really, you know, experience what it all could mean, and then, you know, hopefully move on and not get super depressed. So
yeah, there you go. But anyway, it was great to have you back on, Rob. Glad to have you join us. I will remind our listeners, we still have a Patreon, and you can go out and support us. You could get this episode early. You might have heard it weeks ago. But,
yeah.
But if you're not supporting us on Patreon, you can't do that. So please think about tossing $1 or $2 a month to us.
We have a couple special episodes if you're
Patreon. We do.
People.
Yeah, we tried out a spirit board. We'll see. Well, you can find out what happened there.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case... Only if you support us on Patreon, Rob.
Rob.
Yeah, Rob's like, oh, how did that go? We can't tell you. It's a secret.
I had to look because I don't actually know what a spirit board is.
It's a Ouija board.
Oh, okay.
It's
I
a
did
Ouija
notice
board.
There is still some wax on your table.
There is. It's the generic term for Ouija board. So thank you for listening. We will be back with another episode.
Rob, what you mentioned your radio
yeah.
show.
Sorry.
What's the name of your show again?
Oh, yeah. Indigenous Roots, every Wednesday at 6 p.m. on KFAI, 90.3
nice.
FM Minneapolis, 106.7 FM St. Paul, and streaming everywhere at KFAI.org.
Awesome.
Well done.
KFAI
right.
is a great station and deserves your support.
So thank you, Rob, and we'll catch you next week, listeners.
Bye.
Bye. For our next topic, we'll talk about whether or not weaponized religion is protected by the Second Amendment.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging at geekswithoutgod.com. You can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod, and you can even like us on Facebook.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
We tried everything we could think of to try to get demons to come through.